The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now, Chael Sonnen's on PodcastOne.com. And for that, you're welcome.
What's happening, everybody? Happy Wednesday, and thank you for joining us at another special episode of Your Welcome. Jacob, my friend, I did my DDP yoga this morning. Did you?
I did it yesterday.
You rate. What was your heart rate?
152. You can tell I was lying.
Wait, are you lying? You didn't do it?
No, I did not do it yesterday. I'm
152.
Sorry.
You pull. I mean, that would have been a little bit high, but I bought it, man.
Hey,
you gave yourself up.
Yep.
You gave yourself up. I as soon as I asked heart rate, that was a trick question because they. What's a heart rate? I never checked it. But you don't have to at DDP Yoga. You would have had the heart monitor, and it would have fed right into your app.
Yep.
Had you done it right.
Yep.
You at least have done the research to answer the question, to make believe you've done it, even though you then gave yourself up less than 1 second later. You wouldn't do well in the mafia, my friend.
No, I've told you. I can't play poker well.
I respect that.
I can't play poker.
You're an honest man.
If you play poker, if I'm bidding high, you know I've got a good hand.
I mean, I can't count it as a lie when you then immediately say, I'm lying.
I'm lying.
Then it's not a lie. Then it's just a story with the truth at the end. I could live with that.
Okay, there you go.
I want to tell you this. So, you know, DDP's been on me a little bit. I even mentioned to you, my buddy Brian was going to, he was going to Arizona a while back, and he was wondering if he could make this, you know, portable and take it with him. I was like, yeah, that's kind of the whole thing. You got a little mad here. And then I was using the DVDs, so you don't have to do that anymore. I preferred the DVDs because I thought it was easier than the app until I tried the app. I'm like, oh, I get it. It's an app. Download it and click, push the button one time. So, anyway, DDP heard that, crawled up my ass about it, wanted to call Brian on the phone, which I refused to give him Brian's number. It's like, what message do you want me to get him? But we have had good luck. We've had good luck at people joining us, going through the process. Just going to ddpyoga.com, signing up, and then they're sharing some of their stories on social media. So I'll share one with you, which is I had a heart rate of 124. Now, the workout was 18 minutes, and I told you when I started, I 11 minutes when I started? So I'm now at 18 minutes, but now I'm also tracking the heart rate, which I did not do. I got called out by a guy on Twitter who said, hey, if you're not tracking your heart rate, then you're not doing the whole program. You're asking us to come along the journey, but you're not doing the whole thing, which is not how I looked at it. I just skipped the step. Right? I rolled out of bed. I told you I'd do it early in the morning. I didn't put that. Okay, fine. Did the heart rate because he called me on it. But DDP did ask me to mention something to somebody. So this is it. DDP is headed back to the UK. He's putting on another DDPY Inspiration Meets Perspiration Workshop. And this is one night only. Guys, it's going to be April 19th. At Frome Sport and Fitness in Somerset, England. So go over there. It's going to be an incredible 3-hour workshop. You'll get to meet DDP. You'll get a kick-ass workout. And you're going to get to hear DDP secrets for staying motivated, which is such a key. Such a key. I believe that is a coach's. And DDP is the coach, period. I believe a coach's number one job is to keep athletes motivated. So go over and find out how he does it. Get your workshop tickets at ddpyogaworkshops.com. And if you can't make the workshop, don't worry. There's still a chance to catch DDP in person. That's going to be at the Wales Comic Con, April 21st and April 22nd. Details for that are at walescomiccon.com. I told DDP, as a favor, I would let his English fans know. So there, score is settled. Did you get your coffee?
Yeah.
You have a cup of coffee?
I do.
All right.
Yeah.
I want to talk to you about something. What were we talking about right before we got into that? You said something.
I said a few things. Which one? Which one do you want? Which one's coming to your head?
Throw one at me because I've misplaced it.
Well,
you said something I wanted to touch on.
The first one that I was mentioning to you about was CM Punk.
Oh, okay. That's actually not what it is, but I'll go that direction with you. What do you got? CM Punk's got a fight.
He doesn't have an opponent.
He has a date, though.
He said UFC 25.
225, okay.
I'll be there.
All right. What's it? What the hell are we at? We just had 222, or we even just have 223. So 225, I mean, what are we looking at here?
I think that was
May, June?
I think that was June.
Okay. So he's right around the corner.
I have an answer in about 2 seconds.
He's going to stay at 170 pounds. I got to tell you this. I have no analysis on this. If he doesn't have an opponent, I have no analysis on it. Other than I will share with you, and I have been very sympathetic to this entire CM Punk movement because I just thought it was so relatable. I mean, first, is this a cash grab by a promoter where you go, hey, I got a famous guy and he wants to do this? Yeah, sure it is. But if you look at the other side of it, which is his, man, this is his life. He left wrestling. He is dedicated and in that gym twice a day, every day. He even had an injury. He had to rehab it. I mean, he is sacrificed for the short term here. Everything. He went all in. And he's up against it. That's one hell of a mountain to try to climb at 36 years old. I think it's a cool story. I don't have the same expectations on him that a lot of people do, or maybe even that he has on himself. But I do think it's a relatable story for anybody that's had a bucket list item, and he was given an opportunity. He needed that. It wasn't just a matter of, hey, I'm willing to do it. He had to get an opportunity. But those two things came together, and he took it, and he is putting it on the line. I mean, from embarrassment to anything else, he doesn't care. He's willing to go in and face all that. Man, something about that. I just think that's a cool thing. I just see a lot of hate on CM Punk. But he didn't come in and demand Brock Lesnar numbers or anything like that. He was like, hey, this is something I want to do. I don't need to be bribed into it. I'm willing to set things on hold and go pursue this. I mean, I think that part of the story maybe got a little bit lost in the shuffle of the theatrics that come behind CM Punk as opposed to his ring name, which is his given name, which is Phil Brooks. This is Phil Brooks, man. Give him a break.
The funny part is he almost, well, not quite, obviously not quite, but he racks up Brock Lesnar numbers just because of that whole story.
Yeah.
Who do you think he fights?
You know, I don't have the foggiest idea because I trust that he's still going to do it at 170. I don't think he's big enough for 85, and I think he's too big for 55. I guess there's been no speculation on that, but there was at one point. What weight will CM Punk go? I'm going to trust it's at 170. I'm going to trust that they're going to look at the records. They did that for him in the first time he fought. So now his record's changed. Now it's 0-1 as opposed to 0-0. So I think they find somebody, you know, with right around that two or three fights, regardless of what the outcomes of those were. So that would limit the pool down. And I don't even have a speculation. Now, you do say 225, though, correct? 225. I'm going to guess, without looking, I'm going to guess that's the Chicago card because that's where he's from. Okay.
Yes.
Well, speaking of the Chicago card, Anthony Smith and Rashad Evans are going to fight.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and apparently it's at 205. So I know Rashad had talked about going up, but Anthony, I never heard him say he was going to go up. But apparently it is at 205 pounds. And I think that's an interesting match for a lot of different reasons. You know, a lot of different reasons. I think it's a very dangerous match for Rashad. They're all dangerous matches, right? You can sit back and play. I actually don't like guys that play that game. But they signed the contract, so now it's okay to discuss it. That's a dangerous match. I mean, you're talking about a young buck that's meaner than hell. And not scared of anything. You know, I think you'd say the same for Rashad. I think that you could, but he has been appeared lately to be just a little bit hesitant in there. That's what all of the analysts, myself included, are saying after they watch him fight. But he is an analyst. He is the competitor, and he has said that he's a little hesitant, that he's seen opportunities, he's just not taking them. Anthony Smith's the wrong guy. If you're not willing to put your foot down on that pedal and go hard, you're getting in there with a different kind of animal with that guy. And that's okay. That could bring out the better part of Rashad.
That's what I was about to say.
Yes, that fear in him, this understanding that I'm walking in there with a warrior this time, not an up or down athlete, not a middle of the road, I've got some footage on the guy, I can go study him. You're in there with a different level of animal. And that fear may just bring out, you know, a better Rashad, a Rashad that doesn't hesitate. I like the fight. I like the weight class change. I'm also cognizant it could, you know, it could be the last time.
Is this, if he wins, if Rashad wins, does he fight again? Is this a little bit of a bounce back?
Well, and see, that's an interesting part of this, too. That's why I said it could be the last time, right? Because Rashad, I'm never the guy to call for a guy's retirement before a fight happens. That's not what I'm doing right now. I'm going back to his own interview on the MMA Hour with Errol Hawani. And he said, I might never do it again. And his exact words, the sun's going to set on me sometime anyway. I'd like to go out on top so that I can live the rest of my life with a positive final memory instead of a negative one. Well, I got all of that. I understood that, you know, from my wrestling background. And he was the same way. We both lost our last wrestling match ever, which largely motivated us to keep going in sport. But under the NCAA rules, you got to go find a new sport because eligibility, right? So I got what he was saying. So now let's talk about what you're saying. Either way, this is what you just said. Either way, is this the swan song? And I think so.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think if he loses, I think it could be tough, particularly when he's coming in with a fresh coat of paint. You know, whenever you change weight classes, boom, you get a brand new look. You restart. You restart everything. I'm now undefeated in this weight class for this time frame. That's a real positive mentally, but also marketing. What fans will look at you different. It's new. It's fresh. So if he stubs his toe against a younger fighter.
Who can blame him?
Who can blame him? But the other side of it is, okay, your time is done, and now it's passed on to this generation. That's one way to look at it. I think when you have a star like Rashad, it will be his call. I don't think in the foreseeable that the promotion is going to push him out or cut him. I don't think that will happen. But again, I'm just trying to guess his mindset based on his own words on that interview. So I think that's a fair guess, considering he's on the fence anyway, according to that interview. He's on the fence anyway. So one more loss could probably push him over. And the other side, if we take him at his word, and I thought he was being very sincere and candid, he said he'd like to go out the right way. He said he'd like to go out with a win. So if he gets over on Smith, why not, right? I mean, I'm taking his words.
It's
and
a
I'm
good
just
fight
trying
to go out on, yeah, that's just, for sure, yeah.
But I'm applying it right. I mean, that's 101. I'm not even outside the box here. That's straight up what he said versus whatever's going to happen in Chicago at 225, right?
Right.
Okay.
I just wonder if he's immune to the whole, I just won, can I do it again thing.
Okay, see, now that's the son of a bitch in this whole thing. There's a lot of things you say, and you mean them. Boy, do you ever mean them. But there's something seductive about walking into that building one more time with 10,000 people. They all came to see you and going out and competing. There's something about that's hard to walk away. So I think if I'm understanding you now, you're saying, would a win change his mind?
That's what I'm thinking.
It probably does. It does for everybody else.
Considering how tough the fight would be, yes. We've said that whole thing. It's a tough fight. If he wins with that confidence, knowing he just won a difficult fight, how much harder can it get, right? Right? That might tell him, hey, I've got two or three left in me. Let's see if I can push this out a little more.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're right. It is a good fight to go out on if he really wants to. I just don't know if he's not immune to that whole thing.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, I could only speculate and tell you history of other guys, and then follow the rule, the golden rule. Put yourself in somebody else's shoes. What would you do? I'm coming back, man. I tell you for myself, I'm coming back. I'm not done walking out there until they quit giving me opportunities to walk out there. I love it, and I think he does too. But you know, I don't think we need to hold him to anything he said on Ariel's show. You know, he's a very candid guy. That's why he's such a fun interview. But he is a human being. He's got the right to change his mind. Sure he does. You know, and then if you go out there and you go, okay, that was the piece I was making. Because this is what athletes do all the time. People say, well, they're out of their prime. They're no longer that guy. Careful with that, because I've seen a guy. He'll refine it. He will refine it. I'll tell you for myself, I have not been a motivated athlete. They'll tell you, you got to have motivation. I have not been a motivated athlete, Jacob, in over 10 years. So what do you do when you're not motivated anymore? Well, you go to the default button, which is discipline. Are you disciplined, whether you want to or not, to go get in the car with your gear, drive to practice, get out, go in the locker room, change your clothes, and get on the mat? And that's really what it comes down to. If you're motivated, those things are easy. But what do you do when you lose the what do you do? And it's not because you don't love it. That's not the case at all. It's just a matter of, well, it's not as new. It lost its new car smell. Doesn't mean I don't still want the car. But I'm not, you know, you can lose some of those motivations. So when you have some of these athletes and they go, well, he's out of his prime. He lost to these guys, and these guys, and they never would have beat him before, and his prime's over. Not a bad point. I'm just suggesting to you, and as a guy who's gone through it, if you stay disciplined and you stay in there long enough, you can find those things you lost. You can. And that could happen Well, certainly with Rashad, if he was to get over on Anthony, for sure, he could look back and go, oh my gosh, wait a minute. It's not time to go out and write this one off into the sunset. That's what I'm missing. That's what I had when I fought Forrest and won the world championship, and I lost it for 7 years. I just refound it. Those things can happen. I'm just saying they can. I'm making conversation with you. I who knows, right? It's going to be one of those things where only time's going to tell. But that is a real thing. And writing Rashad Evans off because, you know, he got taken out by Sam Alvey or whoever, you know, one that kind of surprised you, bad move. It's a bad move. Don't write him off. This guy's a world champion.
Yeah, it's all up to him. But wait, it is June 9th. I found it out. It's June 9th, so we only have a couple months to figure it out.
And it's so they're both Chicago then. I am right on that. Yeah, CM Punk and Rashad. I like it. I like it.
You know who else is fighting there?
Who?
225, Romero and Whitaker. That is reset.
That's fast.
Yeah.
Good.
I know.
Turnaround.
Right?
I like that.
Yeah.
Good. Whitaker's healthy again, and that's what that means. And Romero's always looking to stay busy. I like that. I don't love that fight. I mean, that's not a fight that's just crazy. I'm not just pining for that fight, but I like the fight.
It's a title switch fight.
Yeah, and I enjoyed the first one. You know, I thought it was razor thin. Got them both into the 5-round club. They both showed heart. They both showed skill. I mean, I liked it, but I wasn't just pining to see it. So I do want to see the second one more. I am anticipating part two more than part one. So, you know, let's see as the promotion and the build goes. I'm a buyer either way, but I will tell you, I'm not as into that fight. I kind of like I liked when you were a certain Rockhold in there.
That's what I was saying. You're missing the Rockhold.
Yeah, I had fun with Rockhold. Well, Rockhold's now in some dust up with Gustafson.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
which that is true. Yeah,
I respect the hell out of. I got no problem. I'm not. But man, aren't there better guys to pick on than Gus? Is that really the guy?
Well, when it's personal, you don't really care where they're from. That's the fun part about it. You can pick a fight with whoever you want. It just happens. That's the fun part. It's organic.
Yeah, I'll tell you, there is a bigger story there, which is should that fight happen? If you got two juggernauts, two main eventers, jawing at each other, yeah, you make the fight all day long. But the bigger storyline, Jacob, is if that happens, it happens at 205, which means Rockhold is now at 205. So now you got all sorts of parity, all sorts. What if he beats Gus? You know what that means. That means Rockhold's fighting DC.
Yeah, right.
Now you got, you see what just happened here? If you're going to go in and call out Gus and you're going to get the fight, Gus is the number one contender. That means you want to be the number one contender. Well, who's the champ? Your friend, Daniel Cormier. So make no mistake, that's what's happening here, and that's a bigger storyline, and I feel like that's getting lost in the shuffle. You know, I was just talking a minute ago about you change weight classes, you get a fresh coat of paint. I'm not sure Luke Rockhold needs a fresh coat. We all get it, man. He's a badass, for sure. Put him at 205 pounds and give him a fresh coat when he didn't even need one? That kind of shot in the ass, I like it a lot. I like it a lot. I like him up there. I like the Gus fight. I mean, I think it's still Gus, man. Gus is a rough guy for me. I thought Gus was the world champion. I thought he beat John Jones. You know, I can live with the decision. I thought he should have had the strap. And there was an argument that he beat DC. In fact, I think that was a split decision. I think one judge agreed that he beat DC. I didn't have that opinion. I thought Daniel beat him. But that's how good he is. And the fact that Rockhold's willing to bump right up off of a loss and go right after that, respect, man.
That's respect because everyone's now, as it's just been signed up, everyone's all lined up for Whitaker and Romero. That's the title fight now. I like Luke's approach because he's just like, all right, what? It's almost like he's looking around going, what trouble can I make now? Because he's already made trouble at his division. Now he's looking around going, who can I pick on next?
Sure.
Let's pick on a guy who's kind of in the same round, who's had a little rough luck lately. But hey, if we can get one up on each other, and I think that's why he realizes this, then let's have some fun with this.
Sure.
If I win, hey, I could just go down and beat up some guys again. If I win, hey, maybe I could take on DC.
Yeah.
Let's see what happens.
Did you see DJ versus TJ? DJ, Demetrius Johnson made some comments about Dillashaw.
Yes, I did.
Okay. It caught me off guard. Do you know what the comment was? Let's paraphrase. It was something along the lines of, yeah, I'll fight TJ, but pay me what I'm worth. Is that?
Something like that,
okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. It caught me off guard for two reasons. First off, I thought that fight was done. I thought we were just counting down, you know, waiting to get a date on. I thought that was done. And I know Dillashaw has already begun the diet. He's already moving down to, to 125. I even read something somewhere that both belts would be on the line for a first time ever. I thought that was official, whatever I read.
Really?
Apparently it wasn't.
That's an interesting precedent.
I thought it was Dana had said that. But again, I've got that wrong. I guess that fight's not even done. But I am half pissed off at DJ. And I'll tell you why. And I don't know that I have standing in this matter to be, but I'm a fan first. And I also want DJ to get paid what he's worth. I just think that you got to be careful with that argument, right? I think he was paid outside of his worth for a while. He was never been paid outside of his skill set. I would never insult him. He is amazing. And he's an amazing guy. He's a really great guy. I do not think that for the last 3 years of getting a guaranteed $200,000 to fight, that he had any tickets, T-shirts, or pay-per-view revenue that could help support that number. So I think you got to be careful with that pay me what I'm worth thing. I just think you got to be careful with that from a negotiating standpoint. And I will tell you as a fan, I have never missed a Demetrius Johnson fight. Have you? You missed a single one?
No.
Yeah, no. And I will also tell you, in fairness, he's had a lot of fights I didn't want to see. Now, not that I would rather not see them, but I mean, there weren't fights where I'm going, okay, good, I'm excited for that fight. I did want to see Cejudo. I liked that matchup, Olympic champion. I had fun watching him with Dotson. I had fun watching him with Benavidez. But they weren't ones where I'm going, oh, I really want to see that. But I gave my money anyway. And they didn't give me a reduction on the price. I paid full value anyway. Now there's a fight that I want to see. And it does annoy me a little bit that all of a sudden, for me, for a fan that's come along on the journey and supported him every bit of the way, including with my dollars, small contribution, $50 a night, but I still made it. I still matter here. It does annoy me a little bit that now he's turning the gun and going, well, this is a fight you all want to see, and therefore I'm going to hold out unless I get this or this. Now, I get that there's a part of that that he needs to do. There is part of the game that's being played. I'm just offering to you, I never did that to him. When he had fights that I didn't care about, Ray Borg comes to mind. I did not care. Still tuned in. I still support him. I still want to see him. Now he's got a fight that I want. And I think I should be able to get it for the same price. I really do. I feel like whatever debt you think you're owed, this is just me talking. I think there's going to be a lot of listeners that go, well, you know what, Shale, I'm in that pool with you too. I tuned in and watched him too. And they were fights that I wasn't really amped up about. But now I do. Now it's time for me to get paid back a little bit. Charge me the same price and let me see it. So, you know, there's a game that he's not wrong, but I'm not wrong either. I'm not wrong to be a little bit annoyed. This is the one chance. This is it right here. And you have TJ Dillashaw, who is a bigger draw, who is a bigger man, who has to lose the weight, who has to, I would imagine, walk away from his belt unless they do this both belts on the line, which I love for marketing. I love it. But we have seen guys, Conor McGregor, that walked into a different division and they took his belt away after he signed a contract. So I'm just saying, whether that happens or not, we can leave that out. Okay, I don't want people to come and pick my argument apart because of that. May or may not happen. But it is a big risk and a big effort by TJ. So, before you're the one that holds the fight up, I've never seen a B-side hold up a fight. I just haven't seen it happen. The B-side's always asking for the fight. Demetrius Johnson is amazing. He's the number one fighter in the world, pound for pound. I wouldn't disagree with that. None of this is an insult on him as an athlete and definitely not as an individual. But on this one point, man, pay me what I'm worth. Well, how are you valuing that? Certainly you're not valuing that on your skills or your wins and losses. I mean, we're intelligent enough about the business now to realize that that's not what your worth is. Your worth is just simply what can you bring in a piece of that. And a guy that's cut in on the pay-per-view, so he's handled on his worth right there. Boom, you're a partner. You put up absolutely no capital, no equity, and no risk, just effort. And I'm going to give you a piece of a multi-million dollar business, one night only. What can you do? Man, that just strikes me as fair. That just strikes me as fair. And I would tell Demetrius, man, I know you want to get that guarantee up, but from one guy to another, I think you're going to be very, very happy because I think he's missing sight that we do want to see that fight. That's a fun fight. And what if they do both belts are on the line? And that's never been, that's a boxing model. They've never done that in MMA. There's something special there, man. Something very special there. And I really think he's going to hit it out of the park.
Well, okay. A little bit along that, too, is I think part of his mindset is he did drop the word 226. Already that lineup's looking crazy. And okay. He wants some attention, I think.
Smart.
First of all, the word is going to be Stipe and DC.
That's the Stipe card?
That's the Stipe card.
See, get on that card.
It's piling up. So I think he just wants to get some little attention, and then having the marketing of both belts on the line. That's really great for that fight. But he wants. I think it's more just for his own thing. He just wants to feel a little bit assured that yes, he belongs on that crazy huge card. Because like I said, everyone's going to be talking Stipe DC. That's going to be the fight. But I kind of don't blame him at the same time. He wants a little attention. He wants some shoulder rubbing there, going, yeah, we do want to see that fight. It's been in the backwater. Now it's being brought up. Let's give some assurance. This is from his perspective. Let's have some assurance that this fight is still what it should be.
Yeah, well, Jacob, you just solved the problem. You just solved the problem 100%. If you're Dana and you're trying to put this fight together and you got a guy leaning on you for money, and Dana's more than generous. You know, he always gets a bad rap for this. He's more than generous, but he has to be very responsible with his generosity. So he's got to go, listen, I'm going to give you an opportunity to go get as much as you can. So here's where you're in at. Here's what the projections are. Let's see. But beyond that, we got to go see what happens, because I have some fixed costs that I have to take care of. So I can't really adjust that number. Then you've got Demetrius' side going, no, man, pin me, pay me. I've heard that before, and the numbers haven't been there. And then he's even blamed that. He's going, I blame that on your promotion. I don't blame that on my side. If I'm doing my job, I blame it on you. I don't think you promoted it correctly. Okay, interesting argument, but okay, this is where we're at. I think we go off of what you just said. Hey, Demetrius, now let me show you the analytics for this fight, what we believe we're going to do. We're going to put you in a co-main spot. We're going to let you keep your points, and we're going to put the top of the bill, the World Heavyweight Championship. I think you just solved the problem. No way Demetrius doesn't have a calculator. No way he can't sit down and go, okay, now I get it. Yeah, give me my guarantee, you're right, keep me in on the points, and show me where to sign. So what'd you say, that's 226?
That's 226, yeah.
Boom. They make him that offer, he takes that offer.
That's what he was saying. I'd love to fight there for the right money. And I think they got to give it to him. It makes sense. It really does for his sake, for the UFC's sake. I mean, you can't go wrong with that card anymore. If it just gets lined up more and more, it just gets better and better. But yes, I do agree with the fighters. They have to have something special in each of those fights. Otherwise, they just drown each other out. Then it almost becomes a mediocre card. It's just a bunch of great guys lined up. You lose focus of all those things. So each one has to be a little special for some new reason.
Yeah, it gets tough, too. You know, it gets really tough. In fact, Bisping went through this when he had that mega fight with George St. Pierre. He's never going to see a paycheck like that again. Is well aware it's just not going to happen. So it is very tough psychologically, though, for a guy to get a check like that and then go do the same thing against an extremely difficult opponent for a fraction of the pay. And where I'm coming in with that is, let's say you're Dana, you go, but you're aware of that, right? You've been in this business a long time. So you go, DJ, how much you want? I want X. Great. I'm going to give you X. The problem if you're Dana, because he looks at it and goes, this is TJ. I think I can market this right. I'm doing this belt versus belt. You know, both of them are on the line. I got a plan here. I'm going to go ahead and do it. The problem is he has to then look to what happens if Demetrius wins. Well, Demetrius is still a champion. Demetrius is going to be a main event. He's going to be a featured fight. But now he's not going to want to do it for X. He's going to think he's worth X. But I can't give him that, man. I got to give him N. But he's going to look at it and go, what are you talking about? I'm now the double champion. I beat TJ. I'm now a big star. He's like, yeah, I'm not questioning your skills. Just question, can you draw? And I did believe you could this night because of this marketing plan and because of this opponent. But I don't know that once we eliminate him and now all of a sudden we bring the Cejudos and the Benavides and, Pettis Jr. and whoever it may be, I'm not certain that you can again. And I don't want to have this same talk every time I'm trying honor my end of this contract, which is to keep you competitive three times every 12 months. And that becomes the balance. I mean, right, that's what goes into it. It's not as simple as just going, yeah, man, I think this is a big fight. I got a plan for it, and I want to make sure to give you your cut. And the other side, this part never gets told. The expression, right, no good deed goes unpunished. I've never seen it more true than for Dana White. I've never seen him do anything and get buried more than for Dana White. So what he does to compensate this, because he agrees that, hey, sometimes some of these get knocked out of the park, and I shouldn't just leave with a bag of money, even though contractually and legally I have the right to. Ethically, I just don't really like that. So then he sees what the numbers are after the fact, cuts guys' checks. Did you know that? Guys get checks that are outside of their contract that they don't even get a phone call is coming. They just open the mailbox one day, and all of a sudden there's a check. But that's kind of the way it's got to be, right? I mean, he kind of has to do that and go, look, I'm a gambler. I'm not afraid to gamble, but I got to control my fixed costs. But after the fact, if we do well, I'll bring you in on it. And that part of the story never gets told. Were you even aware of that? You're giving me a funny face like that.
I think
Can you
you've told
that?
Me yeah. some things about it, yeah.
I'm just saying, you know, as it pertains to DJ, it is one of these things where you're in a gambler's business, in your gambler's world. And if you want to be partners with a gambler, then you're going to have to gamble. So let's give you a guarantee, right? You're coming to the table, you're bringing us, let's do that. But then after that, man, you got to just trust me. We got to sit back and look at the numbers, and if I got clobbered, then we come up short, and... If we do well, then we do well. And just trust me to do so. I guess I just want to say that because, you know, I know Demetrius listens to the show, and I'm a fan, and I'm a fan of the fight, and I want it to happen. I don't want him to be unreasonable. And it is like, hey, Demetrius, not for nothing, but you did have some in there that we didn't want to see, but you're loyal fans, man. We came along anyway. Now you've got one that we do want to see. It's your turn. It's your turn to pay us back. That's my final piece on that.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if it's just the first experience at having that huge, huge fight. I think he realizes that. And then once after this fight comes around, I can see him going back to, yeah, you know what, that was a once-in-a-lifetime thing. It's not really going to happen again. I mean, there's so many precedents for it. You just mentioned Michael Bisping and George St. Pierre. Bisping got that immediately. I think DJ will get that too. This is a once-in-a-lifetime card. Dana can afford to gamble big this time, but then afterwards, maybe if you draw or not, a few maybe extra bonuses are in line, but I think he realizes that.
Sure.
I think he does.
Sure, but how big? How big? He's already got the heavyweights done. You know,
That's for us to find out. We're not sure yet.
That's right.
That's for him to decide how far he wants to go.
There's some moving parts there. Let's look at the fight. Who wins that fight? Demetrius or TJ? Straight up, no analysis, who wins, Demetrius or TJ?
I pick DJ.
You do?
I do.
Really?
I do.
Okay, now I do want the analysis. Why? How come? How's he beat him?
I don't know. That's his round. That's his floor.
It's his weight class.
Yeah, that's the easiest way of saying it.
Never be, you know what? And that might be what it come down to right there, the weight class. You know, if I told you they're going to fight. All right, let me ask you the same question. Demetrius and TJ are going to fight, except it's for TJ's belt. Demetrius is moving
I'd
up.
I'd immediately switch to TJ.
Yeah.
It's just that way.
Yeah.
If someone pulls off an upset, that's just how cool that fight is.
Yeah.
But I'm voting for the weight class on this one.
I'm with you on that. I hadn't thought about it in those terms until I just said it to you right now, but you're right. I mean, I don't know that I am taking Demetrius. I might be. I need more time to think. However, I wouldn't if you told me they were fighting at 135. I would instantly take TJ. So that could be an interesting thing, right? That's a big percentage of both. What's that, about 8% of body weight, 7.5% of body weight? Some weight matters there. We always talk about weight doesn't matter. That's not always true. That's a pretty broad stroke, and I know we hammer on that nail a lot down here about weight doesn't matter, but that's not an absolute, concept.
Let me ask you a question about this double belt thing. So when boxing does that, is it a thing to settle at one set weight class, or do they sometimes compromise? That just came into my head. It's like, why don't they split? Why don't they do 130?
Well, in boxing, yeah, they do it all the time. Boxing is just, hey, let's just make the fight. What do you agree on? What do you agree on? We have no integrity to the weight classes. We just want to see the fight. That's would be like, you know, the WBA or the WBC, IBF, any one of their organizing bodies. Hey, we don't have an integrity to the weight classes. Let's just agree on a weight. So they kind of let the athletes decide, well, what are you willing to do? Well, what are you willing to do? Hey, here's what he said. Here's what he said. And then they come up with the weight and they sanction it. I don't have a problem with that. Dana just always has. I don't have a problem with that whatsoever. I love just a big group of guys that you got under contract and start matching them up. Now, I would not question the UFC's business model, okay? But on that one thing, I have always said, now, why are we so married to that? Why are we so – and we're seeing it start to get loosened a little bit. But I have always thought, why are we married to that? Go ahead and make a 30. Go ahead and make it 28 and a half.
Just one night?
Yeah, one night. I don't have a problem with it. But there could be. Maybe if somebody explained to me why they came to that rationale, longevity, building of a division. You know, if you go make up a weight class like 128 and a half, well, how do you have competitors or you know, contenders for 128 and a half when it was a one night only? Boom, problem. I just discovered the solution, didn't I? That would be a problem. But and maybe when you're doing championships, that makes it harder. But just for fights, you want to go do a catchweight? You want to go have some fun? You got Gus and Rockhold and some kind of a beef, wherever the hell this came from. Rockhold's not quite ready to go up that high. And how bad does Gus want to shut this guy up? I mean, just by example, just throw that out as an example. But, man, come up with a 194 and a half. I don't give a damn. Just get those guys in there together. So I don't know the answer on that. You know, if you're doing just straight line divisions and championship fights, maybe it's different. But for a little fun here and there, man, go have a catch weight. Go have a grudge weight. Go have a gangster weight. I give a goddamn. Get those two guys in there that said they want to fight each other and let them fight. Right?
I agree. It's just that this one, they're teasing the double belt. So I was like, wait a minute. I don't know. It's if TJ wins, that's kind of a sucker for DJ. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. Do you see what I'm saying?
I got no problem with it. I mean, you haven't said too much, but yes, I know what you mean.
You know where I'm going. It seems weird for someone to walk in on that turf. Let's say DJ gets over on TJ. It doesn't seem right that DJ gets TJ's belt because it's on DJ's ground.
Sure,
you could say DJ defended his belt. But then for him to grab TJ's belt, that seems funny to me.
Well, great.
That's the only reason I'm saying maybe split it down the middle. It just seems a little more.
I hear everything you're saying. Great marketing plan for that night, but huge problems as soon as it's done. Because you go, well, okay, well, now what's Demetrius do? He's got to go up to 135 to defend this sometimes. He's got to come to 125. Same thing with TJ. I mean, they got problems after that. TJ grabs the belt. What's he going to do? And we've seen nobody wants to relinquish a title. Why would they? I don't blame them a bit. So what do you do now? Yet no, TJ's not going to keep coming down to 125. There's no fights there for him. There's this one fight there for him. But his big fights are at 35, man. Look at Murderers Row up there. You got Cody. You got Dominic. Let's just keep matching those guys up for the next 2 years till somebody else emerges and comes forward. I mean, there's some fun. So we'll let all those things work themselves out. They always do. I don't know that overthought or not having all the answers for the future should eliminate you. And, you know, I don't think you should cling to some ideology and lose today. I love to live for the future. I think it's smart. I think it's good business all the way around. But sometimes you got to do stuff today. Let me tell you something for men, okay? There is something that you guys may not be aware of. And the bummer part of it is once you start to notice hair loss, it ends up being too late. And quite frankly, it's easier to keep the hair you have than to replace the hair that you've lost. And that's where Hims is here to help. Hims is a wellness brand for the modern man, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and sexual wellness, making men's personal care trusted, easy, and affordable. Hims offers FDA-approved, medical-grade products, personalized recommendations, plus convenient, confidential online consultation with a licensed doctor. There are no pharmacy lines. There's no waiting rooms. The products are shipped directly to your door. And Hims passes big savings along to you, offering prescription and generic for a fraction of the price. Sound treatment and prevention backed by medicine and science. Look better, feel better, do better with Hims. And for listeners of Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen, that's me. Okay, I get a little credit here. You guys can get a free trial month of everything you need to keep your hair for just $5 while supplies last. This would cost you hundreds of dollars if you went to a doctor's office or a pharmacy. Just go to 4hims, forhims.com/chail for all the details. That's forhims.com/chail to keep your hair. One more time. That's forhims.com/chail to get yourself a trial a whole month for just $5.
You're listening to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
Hey everyone, I'm Wade Keller, and it's WrestleMania season. So be sure to subscribe to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast here at Podcast One. I produce two new shows each week. Every Thursday on our flagship show, I'm joined by a co-host from the wrestling journalism field to talk about the hot topics in WWE and elsewhere. Every Friday, I'm joined by a guest who has worked in the wrestling business, including ex-WWE creative team members like Kevin Eck talking about Drew McIntyre.
Drew was a young guy, and did it go to his head, and did he walk around like he was the chosen one? He did. And I was frank with him. And I said, Drew, just so you know, this is how they view you.
And Podcast One's own Christian Harloff talking about his days working for WWE and Vince McMahon specifically.
As far as the perception of him, I mean, he's the king. He walks in and just, you can feel it. I mean, if the force was real, you would feel the force powering into the room when he enters.
And pro wrestlers, including NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis, also known as Magnus, talking about the challenges facing Ronda Rousey as she transitions from MMA to WWE.
I'm sure if you ask Ronda, she'd probably say that this moment is the result of hundreds of people's work, meticulous preparation and planning and timing and everything. And now suddenly it's like, go. And that can be very overwhelming.
Just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or on the Podcast One app or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
Now back to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
Mother's Cafe, about 0.6 miles from here. You ever been there?
No.
Have you heard of it?
I kind of want to say yes.
I just hear these wonderful things about it. I finally went today. Pretty damn good.
Was this the one that you were trying to go that one day?
No, that was some burger joint.
Yeah,
I never went to that.
Okay.
I don't think I ever made it. I don't know that I've ever made it there.
Mother's Cafe. Yeah.
You want to know what I did? Meatloaf sandwich. A little bit of a weird order. That's not really up my alley.
Meatloaf, as in meatloaf is between the bread? Or?
Yes, they slice the meatloaf.
Okay, I was like, is this like a... Okay.
Yeah, same way you would do turkey.
Okay.
Like a turkey sandwich, a ham sandwich, whatever. Yeah, it wasn't like open-faced and covered in gravy. I don't like sandwiches. I don't even think you should call it a sandwich if you got to eat it with a knife and a fork. No, this was real clean, no gravy whatsoever. So they just, you know, thin sliced the meat. Kind of made it more like a burger, but different seasonings. Lettuce, tomato, mayonnaise, white bread, added cheddar, real simple. I don't know if I'll go back, but it was good. I mean, if you hear about it, a lot of people are talking about this Mother's Cafe in Portland right now, so I'm sharing with you. I think you should go. But they feature breakfast. That's the thing about them. And I saw this, and I'm going to try it. I went in there for breakfast. I ended up, you know, being there about 11:30, so lunch was being served. I grabbed it. Now that I've told you this story, I don't have the foggiest idea where I was going with that. I mean, even Babe Ruth struck out sometimes, all right? They're not all home runs. I felt like I had something. I got 90% through that. How do I wrap this? What's the point? I guess the point's this. If you've heard good things about Mother's Cafe, I will add to it. Mother's Cafe is good. Try the meatloaf sandwich.
You got me on a topic in my head, though. And I have to ask, just because I was in a bed about this one time. Okay, a while ago, actually, it was a couple years back, you had your eating contest.
Yes. With Brian, we won against the bear.
Yes, but that leads me to another thought. Because you just mentioned sandwich, what's the biggest burger? And we're on the radio, so we can't show, but about what's the biggest size burger you've ever eaten in one sitting without having to stop and save it later?
Sure. So I want to answer you in a little bit longer form, though, because I feel that people miss this with burgers all the time. I see so many people go, burger was great. And you go, well, why was it growl? It was this big, and it was blah, blah, and I could barely get in my mouth. That doesn't mean it tastes. I want to know what the best tasting burger was. But I do see people get fooled by size a lot. Now, I can answer your question. Best burger in the world. It's called the world's greatest hamburger. But it officially won the award for America. By who does that? Anthony Bourdain. Who's the big famous food guy? Isn't Anthony Bourdain his name? Dive-ins and dumpsters and drags or something like. He's got some show. This guy named Anthony Bourdain. In fact, his wife's a black belt in jiu-jitsu, by the way. Octavia.
Nice.
Yeah, a bit of a fight fan. I just don't know the name of his show. But he went out and he called it the best in America. He's right. It's the best in the whole world. That's a challenge. I challenge anybody. Prove me wrong. But I'll tell you what's on it. So of course you have the bun, right? You have the beef patty. You have the special sauce, you have your ketchup and your mustard, but then you have all the vegetables, lettuce, tomato, white onion. Got to be white onion.
Not a fan of the purple.
And not a fan of the purple. Don't know anybody who would serve it. Relish instead of pickles, I guess I should say. But
ooh,
then he puts fried egg, bacon, ham. Now, it's not one of these huge, like, you can't get it in your mouth. It's not like that at all. It is a good, there's all those ingredients, so you can see. I mean, it's a good
big. Sounds like a big burger.
Oh, you pick it up. It's just it's grease dripping down your hand. Oh, it's just fantastic. I've never had to wrap it and couldn't finish it, though. I sat there and put myself in a food coma, but it is fantastic. It's called Stanich's. You should go. But I am challenging you. It's the best hamburger in the world.
Is
that's
that
a
here?
Challenge.
Is
yes,
that here?
Right up the road. It's on Fremont.
Oh, really? Oh,
yep.
Really?
43rd and okay. Southeast Fremont. Hmm. You go right over the bridge, you'd be there in 8 minutes. That's with traffic.
Okay. All right. I'll take that challenge. Yeah.
Yeah, take the challenge. And I am challenging you. It's not the best because I'm just saying it's the best and I won't listen to you. But no, I will listen. If you know a better place, you tell me. I'll go try it. Guaranteed, I'll go try it.
Okay.
But I am convinced this is the best hamburger out there. I went to the number four place. The number four that had the ranking of number four. Now, this is when Stanich is the place I'm telling you about, was ranked number nine. It's now ranked number one, but it was ranked number nine. So I went to number four, which is called the Burger Bar inside of Mandalay Bay. And I had just fought Nate Marquardt, and that qualified me to be the number one contender. So, you know, I'm high on life. Everything's wonderful. I got my little after party, which means, you know, my aunt and uncle and my cousins were there. And it, pretty small group, but I've got about, you know, 10 or 12 people there, coaches. And to sound cool, right, because I'm in this good mood where everything's great, to sound cool, when it was my turn to order, I tell the waitress, just bring me whatever's most popular. Now, I know that's not like some super cool guy thing to say, but I said it purely to sound cool. But I also knew I would get a good burger that way. Bring me whatever the most popular is, right? She brought me, first I was on a focaccia bun. All right, excuse me, but gangster, we don't eat focaccia buns to start with. Secondly, no mayonnaise whatsoever. Okay, which now is not a burger, in my opinion. And secondly, or and third, it had sautéed spinach on it, like a big pile. That's all that was on it. There was no lettuce and tomato. There was meat and sautéed spinach. And I'm convinced that that is not their most popular. I'm convinced that she didn't like my attitude. There is no reason
that
you would bring a guy that looks like I look a focaccia burger with sautéed spinach. But all I can tell you is she did and proclaimed it was their most popular while maintaining a number four national ranking. And that, my friend, is boo beep.
You got to give her some credit, though. That was a gutsy move on her part.
I still tipped her and walked out the door.
Yes, I did.
I handled it like, oh, yeah, no, that was great. Because I didn't want to be got. So my way of not getting got by what I could only take as an act of aggression by her was to pretend that I liked sautéed spinach on focaccia bread.
This sounds like a rivalry building. Have you ever gone back?
I have not.
You probably should.
I most certainly will not.
You probably should, just to see if she's still working there and order the exact same thing, the exact same words.
You know, if anybody comes in, though, and you're running a burger restaurant and they're like, hey, you decide for me, you just get them the classic burger, right? Lettuce, tomato, onion, some cheese, special sauce if you've got it. You know, a lot of places are doing the secret sauce, which is generally a ketchup and mayonnaise combination.
Sure.
Yeah, sure, which delicious. Go right ahead. Make a Thousand Island for me. I don't care. Throw some relish in there. Put it on the bread. You don't bring up, man. Come on, man. You
that's
don't bring
what I'm saying. She had
spinach.
Some guts. She had the gall to bring that out to you. I'm applauding her.
I'm a
that's
little
great.
Surprised you're on her side of this. Actually,
I think that was a good move on her part. You one upped her by giving her a tip and saying that was great.
Oh, I scarfed it down. Oh, this just yummy. Just what I wanted because I was just convinced she was trying to stick it in my ass. I still think she was. I really do. Are you following the big gun debate going on right now?
A little bit, yeah.
It's complicated. It really does get complicated. I think there's some misses on the talking points of it. I think that if you're one of these NRA politicians, I think you steer the narrative from gun control to, you know, gun responsibility. Because a lot of them don't want, oh, no gun control, no gun. Well, yeah, there's already gun control. We already have gun control, but somehow that's become a bad word to these, you know, Second Amendment folks. They just don't want to hear that word. We already have all sorts of controls placed on guns. So somehow, if that's become the four-letter term, just change it a little bit. Because, of course, there's room to do things better. That would be a ridiculous statement to act as though there's not. But somehow, I don't know how this argument really got. I do know how it got changed. I just don't know how it had legs to stick. They want to up the age to be able to buy weapons. And, okay, fine. That seems like we're kind of missing the point here to me for multiple reasons that I won't go into. But that becomes a little bit more complicated if you still keep the legal age of an adult at 18. By example, at 18, you can go live on your own, and a lot of people do. One, because they want to get out of the house. Two, maybe they go off to college. But a lot of times at 18, people do go live on their own. So let me paint you a scenario. You have a single girl, female, living alone. She's 19. If you have a creep, and he can do that level of research, he can also deduce she's not going to have a gun. So it gets a little bit more complicated. It's not just a matter of responsibility. There is a whole dialogue with a lot of moving parts and a domino effect that has to be considered. And I do feel that there, sometimes when I listen to the news and I listen to this argument and this debate back and forth, I just go, how do we even get here? You guys have done a really great job of distracting everybody from the point. That part of it confuses me. And, you know, for the longest, I'm at least glad that we are there, because for the longest time, here's been the two debates. Ban guns. Other side of the argument. More guns. Right? Well, if this guy would have had a gun, he could have fired back and stopped that shit. Right? You hear these arguments like it's the Wild West. Both of those arguments suck. They have always sucked, and they have always been around from the beginning of gun control debates. Those are your two sides, and nothing has gotten done, which should be pretty empirical evidence to people to realize we have to let those go. We're not going to arm everybody like it's the 1800s, okay? And we're not going to take all the guns away from everybody. So stop with those arguments. If you actually want to make progress, you're going to have to come in with a new narrative. And that part has surprised me, that at least that realization hasn't been seen yet. That part has really stunned me. Hey, come in with some fresh ideas, you know? What do you think?
There's so many angles on the gun thing. I will admit, I lean more toward the more guns argument. There's so many attacks around that happen with maybe a bomb or something, or someone comes in with a knife. It's like, is it really the gun? Is it really the gun, or is it just people are psychopaths?
Sure.
That's kind of what I think. If that's the case, then I'm more along the lines of, hey, let's actually help kids out, help them get out of rougher neighborhoods or bad families or bad backgrounds, so they don't even have the thought or idea to go shoot up a school. That's kind of where I fall in the whole category. But I do see your point. There's been a lot of dialogue on both sides. And yeah, it's not going to happen either way if they're just taking those two ideologies and then nothing happens and then everything just happens bad, like Parkland a couple weeks ago. But at the same time, I'm kind of stuck there too. I haven't thought of anything new.
Right. If you don't think of something new, I think we at least need to agree. No. I think we have to agree right now. If you're going to come to this debate with the take all the guns away or the other side of it, which is to give out more guns, you're not going to win. That argument has fallen flat. So that part
it hasn't
of it,
gone anywhere.
That's
yeah.
Right. And those Parkland kids were superstars, one after the next. I could not believe what a well-spoken, calm, an objective group that was. I could not believe. I was stunned. I even listened to some of their parents that were all fired. I'm not judging them by any means. The parents were not as well spoken as the kids. Never happens that way. The teachers weren't as well spoken as the kids. This was like the school of stars. One after the next, where I'm sitting on my TV going, who are these damn geniuses? How are they so eloquent? How are they so calm in such a time of turbulence, right? But, you know, I would also just offer to you to consider, at least for consideration, there was an idea that was put forward about 12 hours after that shooting, which was to arm the teachers. And I would suggest to you that's a great starting point. We're trying to get something done. Let's throw some things out there. I think it would also be reasonable for us to conclude any idea that was come up with in 12 hours is not likely to be the final solution.
No, it's brainstorming.
It's
time.
Let's just brainstorm a little bit. Offer something back. Kick it around.
Don't say anything's a bad idea. Just say here. What?
That's right. That's right. Great job inserting a new idea that isn't one of the two boring, tired, and failed ideas. Great job with that. But now let's talk from there. And I'm sure there's answers to these questions. I'm sure that there are, but I haven't heard them yet. By example, let's say you arm all the teachers, okay? Let's say there's 30 classrooms, so there's 30 teachers. And class is going on, and you hear boom, 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 right? Something, boom. Something's out in the hallway, so now it's time to take action. What happens then? Do the teachers leave the classroom and they go and try to stop the assailant, or do you then lock the doors to the classroom, barricade it with whatever it is, and just stay in your room? Because what concerns me on either end of that, what happens when the real pros show up?
Who's the bad guy?
Thank you. Who's the bad guy?
Yeah.
Who's the bad guy? That's what concerns me. And I don't think, you know, I even read that there's going to be some training for teachers to carry guns, and they must take 138 hours of training. So I instantly sit down and do the math in my head and go, wait, that's just a few weeks. I mean, if you're taking 8 hours a day, you're putting into work terms, right? 9 to 5. Go, wait, that's just a few weeks. It seems like we've got some real scenarios that would need to be tested and tried. And I don't know that gamble isn't better. I'm very open to the whole thing. I'm just happy that it's no longer the let's give everybody guns. Oh, let's take everybody's guns. I'm just happy that at least we're getting some fresh talk in here. But I do think I make a good point by saying to you, an idea that was formed in 12 hours is probably not the finished, polished idea. That's reasonable.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I've also thought that Dana Loesch, who I know, and I know her very loosely. She has a podcast. She couldn't do it one day, and I filled in for her. Steven Crowder, in fact, filled in for her, and he called me to help in and then fill in and... So I know her well less than 30 seconds, but at any rate, this is my relationship. And she's a spokeswoman for the NRA. She had the balls to go out there, sit in Florida, and answer every question asked. I don't want to begrudge her because I think that was a very hard spot. And you could possibly even call it a setup. It was a hostile crowd. She knew what she was getting into, and she went out there and handled it. I did think she missed the mark of explaining we are not, as the NRA, I'm not a member of the NRA. I'm just sharing with you that this is her job to represent the NRA. I did think she missed to say, we are not the monster in the closet that believes in arming these people whatsoever, not even a little tiny bit. We are for making sure that reasonable, honest people that either want to hunt or have self-protection have the ability to do so. And that is the message that was greatly missed in her dialogue. It turned hostile. She tried to stay calm without firing hostility back. I think that message was lost and really needed to be what's clear. The NRA has a motto, and it is a very good motto. It's hard to get around this. And their motto is real simple. The only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. Well, people can get behind that. That actually makes sense. The cops have guns to stop the bad. People are going to understand our military has guns to stop our adversaries. We get that one. I think they've let the narrative get away from them. And I think it's time to reel it back in. And if that even includes legislation for mental background checks or follow-ups, or you've got to go through a gun course, you've got to see the damage that gets, whatever it may be, I think that they've really lost that part of the talk, and I thought that's what they should have pushed a little bit better to strengthen their argument.
I have to weigh in a tiny bit on it. That you're talking about the town hall meeting down in Parkland. I really liked. Some people kind of griped on it, but I really liked what the president did right afterwards. He just sat down and listened to people. Some people were emotional, but there wasn't any talk back. He was just sitting there with a group of people listening. Now, some people might have gotten on the bad side of that, but I was like, hey, this is kind of along the... People are used to the whole town hall thing, and then people get all upset, and they start yelling at each other, and people forget what they're really there for, and then it just becomes raw and fresh, and nothing gets done right there. No. Listening to ideas and listening to that whole thing right fresh off the bat was kind of cool. And then just seeing what thoughts people have about that. I thought that was a great thing for him to set. And then we went back to the town hall formula less than a week later. I was like, no, that's a step in the wrong direction. We were about to do something kind of cool, and then it kind of just all fell apart on both sides.
I agree with you. Rubio showed some guts on that, too.
That was guts, but then, again, it turned into a screaming
match.
That's right.
Rubio's not my favorite politician, but that doesn't mean he doesn't have his points. You know what? I'm good on this topic if you're good. How did we even start on this? Who's controlling the show down here?
You are?
Where's the show sheet? Don't we have a dialogue? How do we go from fighting to talking about that? I guess the narrative, though, you know, maybe that does tie into fighting in some way. You've got to control that narrative. I thought that Dana Loesch really let that get away from her and look like she was the defender of the big bad monster in the room and said, again, man, this isn't what we stand for whatsoever. We stand for reasonable people giving themselves reasonable confidence to protect themselves or to hunt. Those are the two things, and that's all, and nothing more. And any idea that you guys have in between, bring them on out. We'll be the first to sign up for it. I thought that would have been very responsible. So there's all sorts of controls on guns, but somewhere that's become the awful word to one side, and that's become the demanding term for the other side. Man, there's already all sorts of controls. So loosen up a little bit, you know? Loosen up a little bit. It's not just a free-for-all, man. We can't just go grab grenades. Even the good people, we just can't. There's limits on it. You don't get to have armored tanks. You don't get to have some of these things. So go ahead and have the dialogue. Go ahead and have the discussion. Guys, let me tell you some useful car tips you might not be aware of. Did you know a coffee filter and a little bit of olive oil can clean your interior? Removing excess weight from your car will improve gas mileage. Placing your key fob on your chin will increase its range. Weird, right? Ready for one more tip you might not know about? TrueCar also helps people get used cars. That's right. TrueCar isn't just for buying brand new. With their certified dealer network and nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you'll really enjoy pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience, whether you're buying new or used. And with TrueCar, users can see what others paid, so they know if they're getting a good deal before buying. They're more likely to enjoy a faster buying experience by connecting with TrueCar certified dealers. So when you're ready to buy, new or used, check out TrueCar and enjoy a more confident buying experience. Some features not available in all states. You know what? I have had it. I have had it with you all. Jacob, you got anything?
No.
Good answer, my friend. Well, then I will leave you all with this until Friday. For Jacob, I'm Chael, and you are welcome.
Thanks for listening to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Hey, humans. David Smalley here from the Dogma Debate Podcast right here on Podcast One, where we talk about all the things you're not supposed to discuss at work: religion, politics, abortion, racism, slavery.
And that's only when we open the Bible.
We discuss Islam, Islamophobia.
What does that even mean?
We chat with vegans, animal rights activists, and even visit factory farms to see it for ourselves. I invite people from multiple backgrounds to convert me into their worldview. But as long as they're okay with being respectfully challenged,
you better bring your evidence.
And I never lose sight of how both the left and the right are seeming to lose their minds. So basically, we're solving all the world's problems right here on Dogma Debate.
And you've been missing it.
Download Dogma Debate on iTunes, Stitcher, or PodcastOne.com.